Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm also your host, Brad Jackson. Switch it up. After 70-something episodes, why the fuck do we keep saying the same thing? People know who we are now.
So we don't have to think of new things.
we're getting too comfortable.
So, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
Well, this week, as you catch me mid-smoke here, we are smoking the CAO Fuma M. Corda.
Which means smoke on a rope.
I mean, which is kind of fitting for the, you know, segment that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, because this week we're going to talk about, it's summertime, and you think about, you know, hot desert life, you think about graboids. So we're going to talk
our
about the
blasters. Depends on
the Trimmers series.
Shriekers. Yeah, I mean, they go by a few different names depending on the evolution. But yeah, yes. I
mean, they've hunted them in South America and Argentina and Mexico. I mean, it's
speaking
kind
of
Brazilian.
Hunting, if you're out hunting for graboids, what should you do? Call in a strike force.
Yeah, you're going to need that going up against those big worms. Call in your strike force. StrikeForceEnergy.com comes in a little pouch so you can take them on all your graboid hunting missions.
Fits in great with your MRE collection, yeah. Too.
And you even get them in that 750 milliliter bottle. Kick the can, but always use promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. Yes, we talked about the CAO Amazon Basin before, which is kind of a unique cigar because it uses a tobacco called Braganaca that comes from like a small village in Brazil where they literally have to ship out the tobacco on canoes down the Amazon River, hence the name Amazon Basin. Well, they've released a new version, a new blend of that cigar where they've acquired some other Brazilian tobacco called from the state of Alagoas called Arapicara. But the locals there ferment it in these long ropes of tobacco, hence the name Fuma M. Corda, which...
Yeah, we need to make sure to upload an image, too, because
yeah,
these things look...
There'll be a link to the article in the show notes, because, yeah, this is pretty impressive, these giant tobacco ropes that these guys make when they're fermenting
the tobacco.
I mean,
they look like, you know, for all intent and purposes, like, if you could dreadlock tobacco, this would be it.
Pretty much, and, you know, the band, just like the Amazon Basin, is made of braided tobacco leaf, and this one, like, the Amazon Basin had, like, a... three rings. This one has two kind of in an X formation to stand apart from its cousin cigar.
Yeah, so these are going to be available in two different sizes in your, you know, brick and mortar retailers. We're actually smoking the 5x50, the Robusto, but later on there should be a Toro getting
released.
Well,
the Robusto is going to be brick and mortar only, and then the Toro is going to be their like internet retailer only.
Oh, the catalog retailers, I see. Yep.
So yeah, if you can find this in your local stores,
yeah, because there's only what, like 3,000 boxes.
Yeah,
so,
it's kind of a limited run because they don't get much of that tobacco, and the Arapicara is blended with the Braganaca, also some Nicaraguan and Honduran fillers with a Cameroon binder and Honduran Corojo wrapper.
So, you know, my initial thoughts on this cigar are, you know, this is coming in at a medium with a hint, you know, to medium full. You know, to me, it's very similar to the Amazon Basin, but there's an added note, like
a
lingering, you know, like spice on the back of the throat. Like it's... You know, and it's subtle. So, I mean, it's not in your face, and it's not like a lot of cigars where...
That sweet rope flavor.
Yeah. I mean, it's just very unique. You know, kind of hard to describe, actually. But, I mean, you know, it lingers for 15, 20 seconds, and then, you know, the spice subsides, and, you know, then it basically becomes, you know, very much medium at that point. So, you know, quite a complex blend here. I mean, I'm really digging it. Like, my taste buds are, what the fuck have you done to us?
Yeah, I'd take a canoe up a river to get a couple of these.
Yeah, absolutely. And battle an anaconda or two. Yeah. Graboid 6 or 7.
Yeah, this apparently is going to be part of a trilogy of releases, and the next version when it comes out is the Amazon Anaconda.
Maybe a little foreshadowing there.
My anaconda don't want none unless you got cigars, son.
Perfection. A scorched outpost in the middle of nowhere.
You know how close I am to leaving this place right now? How close?
Maybe that's why Val and Earl decided to leave town.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa.
Hey, hold up. That's Edgar Deans.
They just picked the wrong day to do it.
Jeez. You guys better get the hell out of here. There's a killer on the loose.
Could be doing it.
Is that a snake?
I'll give you boys $5 for this. 20.
That's how they get you. They're under the ground.
What the hell are those things? How could they eat a whole station wagon?
But where do they come from?
I vote for outer space. No way these are local boys.
You see, they're headed right for us.
No Richter scale can measure it.
They're coming!
No scientist can explain it.
Bert, they're under the ground!
You didn't get penetration even with the alpha gun.
Run, run!
And no one knows what to call it.
Megaworms or suckers or suckoids.
Now this valley is just one long smorgasbord.
Now, it's up to Val and Earl to save the world.
That's one big mother.
Who died and made you Einstein?
And they know just what to do. Flip for it.
Damn.
Kevin Bacon. Fred Ward. Tremors.
And welcome back to the podcast. We're going to talk about the movie series Tremors. No big anniversaries that we know of, but we're just like, man, you know what's a good movie? Freaking Tremors.
Is it really
did somebody actually say that, though? I mean,
dude, it's a good movie. And speaking of which, we've got Norm back in the back in the nerd cave.
Hey, everybody.
We dug him up like a graboid. He sensed vibrations and said, hey, you guys podcasting?
Actually, I think he was here for the Ass Blaster shoot or something, but you know, yeah, that's off the air.
This is not that con.
is that your new drink that you're making, the Ass Blaster?
Was that dinner last night?
Could be. Sounds like a bad porno.
I did have a big bowl of beans and ham the other night.
Oh,
so.
Lord. So we've already, you know, talked about, you know, here it is, 50 something seconds into the recording, and we've covered the first three movies. Yay! Good job, guys.
So yes. 1990s Tremors, directed by Ron Underwood. Only made for $11 million, only made $16 million, so it wasn't what you would consider a blockbuster film, but it has kind of gotten a huge cult following through the years. It's one of those that seems like it's always on Sci-Fi Channel or something, at least one of the movies, you know, because yes, there was four sequels that most people don't realize. But they were all direct-to-video.
The sci-fi, Tremors? TV series Tremors,
yeah,
so was, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I actually know about that one.
The TV series wasn't that bad. It was kind of a sequel to the third film. But I kind of equate this one to Jaws on land. It's very reminiscent of the first Jaws movie. Even if you look at the poster of like the guy standing in the desert and the giant monster coming up from there, it looked very much like that original Jaws poster.
Yeah, I definitely had that feel. You know, for me, it was kind of crazy. Like, you know, I mean, I grew up watching Tremors, and I always kind of remember Tremors trying to, you know, kind of do that whole Jaws, you know, like scary, you know, type thing. Yeah, but then I go back and I watch it as an adult, and I'm like, Actually, I would say that this is probably action comedy, and they realized real quickly that, oh yeah, we gotta lose the serious vibe, because...
I mean, just... the first couple scenes, where people are just getting sucked into the ground horrifically, and you're seeing these weird snake-like creatures, like, it was almost like Jaws, where you didn't see the creature fully until, what, halfway through, if not
yeah,
a little bit farther
something like
in the movie.
That.
And even on the poster, they used a close-up shot of one of the tentacles, so you didn't see what the actual monster looked like. They didn't want to give away the money shot, you know, on the poster. They wanted you to wait for the very penile-looking graboid to come
exactly.
out of the ground.
And I actually read in my research for this podcast...
research?
Yeah, exactly. that was actually a point of contention when they were creating the poster art for this, because they initially didn't want to use any images of the... graboid while they were doing it, but then they changed their mind like at the last second and threw it in there.
Yeah, because those little like nasty looking snake things that would come out of its mouth was always, those things look almost creepier than the big thing.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know,
the whole creature without a face kind of thing just attacking you from nowhere, everywhere actually. So,
you know,
it's a horror staple.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll get into it because I've got some, you know, I want to compound on that idea a little bit because, I mean, the big thing, a man in a barrel can survive.
Yeah, we'll get to that one eventually. Yeah, this one starred Kevin Bacon. So for any of you playing your 6 degrees, this is one of the degrees you can use. Yeah, Kevin Bacon playing Valentine and Fred Ward as Earl Bassett. And my personal favorite, Michael Gross as Burt Gummer. Yes. The crazy survivalist who's married to Reba McEntire, plays his wife Heather in this first movie. And I'm like, I always want to be Burt when I grow up. I want a bunker full of guns.
You're working on that.
I'm already in the middle of nowhere. Now I just need the bunker full of guns.
Yeah, and you know, it's always funny that, you know, the thing about Tremors, you know, is... where the hell did they come from? Like, you know, they you know, just mysteriously appear in Nevada and the town of Perfection, of all things. But, you know, there's no origin. There's no nothing outside of they predate the, you know, dinosaur era. And it's just...
Yeah, and you don't even find that out till like, 2 movies in. Yeah. Like, there's no explanation of... There's no, like, you know, like most B-horror movies, there's that thing of, like, oh, a barrel of toxic waste fell off a truck and leaked into the local river and mutated something.
Well, I was working with
a nuclear blast
from the nuclear tests mutated a bunch of worms.
Yeah, but there's like never any kind of because these people obviously have been living in this little desert town for a long time, and no one's seen a graboid till now.
I mean, you know, that's what kind of strikes me as, you know. Reading into this film and, you know, the film series, so I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit, but, you know, the town of Perfection, you know, they're looking to try to grow and expand. You know, you get to Tremors, you know, 3, and basically they're trying to create a graboid theme park, you know, type thing. And Tremors,
that's worked for everybody that's tried it.
Well, you know... you know, then you get to Tremors, you know, 4, which we go back to the Gold Rush era, which the first film alludes to. You know, you see some of the...
They say that there's a lot of mining in the area, and it was originally a mining town. And so, that's kind of one of the things they allude to, is like maybe
I almost
dug something up with
like
the mining.
You know, the thing for me was what we've talked about with so many films is... You know, it's almost like the capitalist greed, you know. You know, in the second film, when they're in Mexico, you know, it's the oil field. So it's like, all right, well, if you're mining for gold, if you're looking to, you know, grow your town and expand, if you're looking to drill for oil, mysteriously, you get graboids. So, I mean, that to me, I was like, well, is this some kind of, like, political play, or
well, even in some like the old like kaiju movies, there's the origin where they, you know, were drilling for something, or scientists were digging stuff up and happened to come across a preserved monster that has been buried and now is awakened. It's kind of, you know, throws back to some of those origins without actually ever giving an origin story. It's just like you got to accept all of a sudden there's at least four giant maggots. Yeah,
that was the thing I was hoping with the fourth film was, all right, well, we're going back to the 1800s. Maybe we're actually going to learn about the origin. Nope.
Yeah, gold mine, or sell you with silver miners, dig up...
Yeah, copper, actually, I think. Well, was it copper?
Nothing was silver.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Somehow, like, eggs got dug up and a hot springs, you know, reignited them and a couple graboids got born. But yeah, like I said, yeah, there's no origin story. It's just like, one day this town has giant worms that are eating people.
Yeah.
Accept it, move on.
And Kevin Bacon, you know, trying to work odd jobs and just earn an honest living. You know, he's a little bit heartbroken over his previous love not working out and just happens to find love and then the end.
It's a grand love story.
Yes. I mean...
Val and Earl are like the unluckiest people because, like I said, they make a living, you know, just kind of roaming from thing to thing.
They're doing odd jobs. I mean, that's all it is.
And then they finally have a shitter explode on them and they're like, nope, we're leaving. And as soon as they go to leave, we find... Earl up a power pole. Yeah, that's like the first dead guy they find that something scared him so bad he couldn't come down. And they, you know, take him back to town. And they try to leave again and come across like...
the road construction crew.
Well, they pass them, but then they come across the one of the old farmers and somebody's ate all his sheep. And they find that... That was always the weirdest like scene where they find his hat laying in the middle of his field. And they go to pick up the hat and it's just his severed head is like in the ground underneath the hat. So now they're like... Fuck, we got serial killers.
Yes.
And of course, being this like one horse town, the graboid eats the people doing road construction and causes a cave in. So now they're trapped in this little town because, you know, something has ate the road workers.
Which is weird because you're in the middle of the desert. Like, are you really confined to that road? I mean, can we not just go around? Because there is miles and miles of spaces. Desert out there.
I think it was being like in a mountain valley. There was like, you know, supposedly trails around that they you couldn't get through without a four-wheel drive truck, and their truck got eaten.
That's why you bring in the bear cat.
Okay, yeah, so you need like one of them like armor-plated SWAT trucks to go deal with these things.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, you know, it's...
I mean, would an armor-plated SWAT truck actually stand a chance at this point, though?
I don't know, it may just swallow you whole and...
I don't know, you know, in the second film, you know, Bert made it out with his truck. I mean...
It's hard to stop a freaking deuce and a half. I mean, they ate most of the body off of it, but the wheels and everything were still intact. Until they ate his engine.
See, exactly.
Don't eat the engine.
Yeah, but this movie, you know, also had a classic actor in it that we've talked about a couple of his movies, Victor Wong playing Walter Chang. You may recognize him as the crazy Chinese guy from The Big Trouble in Little Chinatown with seven demon bag.
But, I mean, he was still kind of the crazy Chinese guy, you know, because he's like...
Or the crazy Chinese guy in The Golden Child.
Because that's
talk about a typecast character actor, I mean.
But, I mean, you know, you gotta give the guy a break. I mean, you know, here he is just, you know... trying to operate an honest business, and, you know, I mean, the marketing is brilliant, you know, like the big, you know, wooden banner on the side that, you know, come see a graboid in really big letters, and then, and, you know, the little tiny letters, tentacle. So, I mean...
Yeah, he was a genius marketing guy, because he, you know, when they try to get out of town, and they go to turn it around, one of the tentacles comes out and bites... the axle of Earl's truck and gets ripped off. That's the first time that you actually see at least a piece of what's hunting people. And freaking Walter's like, I'll buy that for $5. Like, no way. And he finally, I think, ends up buying it for like $20.
Yeah, I think it's like 15 that he's selling. Yeah, 15.
And then he's like, puts it up in his shop and is like selling photos with it for like $5, $10 a piece.
Yes.
the man is a business genius.
But I mean, I think that's what, you know, was... ultimately, you know, kind of, you know, Valentine and, you know, Earl, you know, kind of their demise. I mean, they're good, honest, hardworking people, but they don't have a lick of business sense. I mean.
No.
I mean.
I remember playing earlier on. But then we also have the Finn Carter playing Rhonda, the... geologist that just happens to be in the desert studying seismology, and like, why is all these weird isolated earthquakes roaming around the desert?
Oh, look how conveniently there is an expert on hand when, you know, the apocalypse comes.
I don't know if you can really say, you know, she was an expert. I mean, you know, she knew the seismology equipment and that it was...
Someone has to be able to spout scientific facts in any of these, like, big monster movies. There has to be some person that's like, oh, I'm sure it's, like, you know, weird biology or whatnot. You're going to have someone to, like, just try to make...
sense out of...
So, yeah, someone to say the big, like, geological words that would not sound right coming from Earl or Val.
A little redneck ingenuity.
Speaking of convenience, when they, you know, get attacked in the desert and their horses get eaten, they're in a desert, there just happens to be a couple giant rocks to go stand on and not get eaten. Well, like, I mean, look, there's nothing else around, there's just, like, rock formation.
Yeah, that to me was kind of the, you know, almost the nail in the coffin for, like, how menacing, you know, are these things really? I mean, you know, because you see it so many, it's not like they're on top of, you know, a solid rock mountain or anything. No, they're on top of, you know, freaking, you know, stepping stones that are maybe 6-7 feet high at best, and it's like...
Well, the thing is, those the original Graboids were, like, super patient. They're like, we can wait, like, with like, we waited.
You're gonna get hungry.
Yeah, we waited 3 days for that guy to, like, die in the tower and wouldn't go away. You know, and then, like, later on, like, you know, they always show them kind of getting smarter the longer they're around, you know, so when they, you know, go to the roofs of their buildings to hide, then it's, they start eating the foundations of the buildings out from under them, so the buildings start collapsing.
But they can't do that with the rocks.
Yeah. It's hard to eat a full rock.
But, I mean, I do have to give them credit, though, because the whole, like, freaking RC car with, you know, dynamite is just freaking brilliant. Like, you know.
Imagine today they could use drones.
Nah.
What do you think?
I don't know, because drones fly. They wouldn't fly.
Yeah, but drones could be used to drop things further out to draw their attention, make it easier to get away.
Or you could, like, have a drone with just a... dragging a stick of dynamite along the ground.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That too.
But we know the Graboid... the Graboid then becomes a Shrieker, and, you know, the next evolution in the phase is the Ass Blaster.
Like, that would have been a good thing for fighting the Ass Blasters with, you know, armed drones.
Yes.
Oh.
I'm sorry, just call in an airstrike and call it a day.
Call in the Strike Force.
Oh, did you already do your sponsor? Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
Oh. But, yeah, but I always love the character of Burt Gummer as the crazy survivalist guy who has all the guns that I want, living out in his, like, you know, his survivalist compound, and, you know, he really, you know, as the movies progress, became like the star. He's like the only one who's in, like, every single version. Like, it's like, we can't get any of the other actors.
He's
to come
the only
back. We can always get Michael Burris to to appear.
Yeah, because, I mean, you had Earl returns in the second one.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, by the time the next movie came out, which would be Tremors 2 Aftershocks in 1996, Kevin Bacon had gotten too big to come back to.
Yeah, because he saw what happened with the first one. He's like, yeah, no.
Yeah, I'm not doing, like, B-horror anymore. I'm going to go back to, yeah. Doing Jason, the first Friday the 13th movie was enough. I need to get back to, like, actual mainstream movies. I need to go be in an X-Men film or something.
Ah, yes. But
yeah, the I mean, that first movie, the and just, like, the ridiculousness of Bert's, like, survival character in that, where, you know, nothing works. He's like, you know, I can't shoot through the dirt. I've got all these toys and nothing can do anything. And it just busts through my wall in my basement and ate my guns. But I love that line where they're downstairs and he turns on the brass cleaner and the vibrations, the thing, like, comes busting through the wall, and him and his wife just, like, unload, like, 4 or 5 different guns into the thing, and it finally dies. He's like, you busted the wrong rec room, motherfucker, or something like that. You son of a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things, I think, for me, like, is there's so many great one-liners, you know, between the characters that, You know, it took away from the action because it became such an over-the-top comedy at times.
Just the ridiculousness of some of it. And, like, especially when they all get back to the town and they start attacking the town and, you know, poor Walter gets eaten and half the other people. And they come up with a plan to, you know, drag the townsfolk out on the back of a trailer that they got hooked to a bulldozer. And the bulldozer ends up getting trapped. And Bert's like, y'all have got me out here on this rock. Like, we could have stayed at our home that was full of guns and food that we could have survived. But instead, I'm out here going to die on a fucking rock with you idiots.
But, you know, I mean, Reba in her typical fashion. Oh, don't be a Debbie Downer. We're not dead yet. It's not over. But that was weird to me. Like, you know, I mean, the Graboids have taken down buildings. They've taken down vehicles. Yet the tractor somehow, like, is the saving grace. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a 30-ton tractor. It's a subterranean beast.
Well, that's what they finally do is just dig a big hole and it falls into it like some kind of trap.
Well, yeah, basically. There's no reason why that should have worked.
And then they come up with the dynamite fishing scheme that they're able to take out one, but then the second one spits it out at them. So they have to, like, scare it away with the dynamite and make it run off a cliff.
I will say
that, Wile E. Coyote style.
You know, I mean, I do have to give this movie props for, you know, putting pole vaulting back on the map. I mean...
But the one highlight of this movie over the remainder of it was everything was a practical effect. Like, all the Graboids and everything were either full-size puppets or, like, a quarter-size miniature or something like that. There was no CGI in this original movie. Because some of the later ones went cheap and went full CGI and it just looked like ass.
Literally.
Yeah.
Blasters.
Oh, God. You know,
and practical effects in the horror genre are king.
There's
no CGI that can that can take the
because especially
place yet over a really well put together practical effect.
Especially in these movies because they take place in the bright daylight. You know, most horror movies, there's some like darkness that will conceal a lot of the bad CGI effects. But when you're in like bright noonday sun, the CGI, if it's not done well, just is like immediately noticed.
No, that and the cast.
Come on, dude! It was 1990. All right.
Well, yeah, certainly it's 1990, and CGI effects would have been just awful. But you know, live cast react way better to something they can see and react to than you know.
I've got a green screen.
Okay, we're going to put something there. Or
shoot at that tennis ball and scream.
But we're going to have the guy in a green morph suit. Pretend that he's there, so kind of look at that.
But yeah, we got a sequel directed by S.S. Wilson. 1996 Aftershocks, which, you know, the only person that could get back was, of course, Bert and Fred Ward as Earl. Because apparently, you know, him and Val got, like, famous after finding the original Graboids, and he kind of took his money and started an ostrich farm that was not making any money and just did not...
Oh.
Like,
what a thunk.
Got completely
well,
like screwed
I mean, I
out
don't
of a hole.
I think it was more that he screwed himself over by not having lawyers and stuff. Because I mean, there were video games, there were comics, there was
yeah,
all
and everyone
this
was
great
like, man, you must make so much money off of this stuff. And he's like, yeah, I didn't get any of that.
But you know, not having the business, you know, sense.
Yeah. And supposedly Val married the geologist, and they went and lived happier ever after, so he wouldn't come back.
You know, I was, you know, and they did reference that very early on, which I'm kind of glad, because that did kind of close the gap. Like, I mean, because, you know, Val and Earl were very tight-knit. Like, if there were two guys that were going to stick it out to the very end, it would have been them. But, you know, for, you know, Val to run off and get married and get the hell out of perfection, is that really perfection, though?
Yeah, giant monsters coming out of the ground to eat them.
Yeah, and this one
also never been a more aptly named place.
Introduced Christopher Garland as Grady Hoover, which is kind of like the Val replacement, because you know Mexican oil refinery starts getting attacked by Graboids, and they're like, we need an expert to come down here and hunt them. So they go find because Val already tells them no. So they go find Earl, and they're like, we'll pay you $50,000 for every graboid you kill. And he's like, man, that might be worth going to Mexico for.
Yeah, but it really takes, you know, Grady some persuading to, you know, get Val to finally commit, you know, and like, look, you know, we can do this. And, you know, I think eventually, what, they negotiate for like $100,000 each or
something.
Yeah,
almost, give, I think they'll give them $100,000 if they capture one alive, but it's like $50,000 apiece dead. Not $50,000, but like $50,000 apiece, which... Yeah. Apparently they had a lot of graboids down there in Mexico.
You know, sorry, that's the other thing.
If that was me, I'm just not taking the chance. $100,000 for one alive, I'll just kill more of them and collect.
But yeah, like the... And, you know, as you say, Earl, not the businessman, you know, the Mexican government offers him whatever he wants. And he just kind of like a case of dynamite and some RC cars and, you know, just a couple smaller guns and stuff. Didn't really take advantage of the deal. And then when they find out that there's way more down there than they thought, they call Bert, and Bert shows up in a freaking deuce and a half with like 2 tons of explosives and freaking 50 cals and elephant guns, and he's like,
well,
I always come prepared.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, you know, given the proper information, which we will go into a little bit later, you can be properly prepared. And
yeah. And also...
I was going to say, and these aren't the same old kind of creatures from the previous movie.
Or, you know, so it starts out that, you know, you're fighting the, you know, standard graboid. You know, everything's going as planned. But, you know, just like with the previous film, they progressively get smarter. And, you know, we later on learn that they actually evolve into what get called shriekers.
Yeah, and the... Turns out the graboids is kind of the larva stage of a this life cycle.
So yeah, so those are the babies that we're fighting.
So then each one produces 3 of these things they call the shrieker that's now walk on land and hunt with heat sensors. And if you feed them, they multiply, kind of like gremlins.
Gremlins, yes. and you know, in fact, like they almost had a like very gremlin like almost appearance to them.
But yeah, those things were a little bit more menacing because, like I said, they just eat and grow. It, like, especially like you end up getting locked in a shed that's full of like, you know, Bert's MREs that he had brought down, and so they go from having, you know, 9 or 10 of these things to an entire warehouse load. They're running all over the place. And this also introduced the character of Kate Riley because they had to give since Earl is now the star of the movie and replaced Val. They got to give him a love interest who is the
Miss Playmate, 1974, October.
Yeah, thought that was hilarious because earlier
Grady's trying to basically, you know.
Yeah, when Grady's trying to convince him, he's like points to this centerfold he's got hanging on the wall. He's like, you know why I hang that up there? To remind myself to never go after something I absolutely can't get. And then, you know, he's kind of got the hots for this girl, and at one point they're finally, like, you know, trapped on the roof together, and he's kind of getting her whole backstory, and she's like, yeah, I went to college and stuff, you know, paid my way to college, you know, kind of doing some modeling and some acting. In fact, I was even a playmate once. And he's like, wait a minute, October 74? And she's like, does the pose that's in the photo. And he's like, holy crap, I can have what I want.
What a coincidence.
But what are the odds?
So brilliant foreshadowing.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, but when Bert shows up, like I said, he's prepared to fight graboids. And when the shriekers show up, he's like unprepared because they just ambush him and like destroy his truck nearly. And he ends up capturing one, but he comes back and his truck. So he's like,
I was not apprised of the proper situation. Like, I feel I'm missing critical intel.
And he's like, y'all should have done some kind of research. Like, we don't know. This thing just happened. He's like, well, I took out 4 with some auto fire and some small arms fire and eventually just hand to hand combat. And I ran over a bunch of the truck. And he's like, I'm completely out of ammo. I've never been in this situation before. It's just so like a man that's like always, it's like it's the sadness of like, I'm completely out of ammo. How does this happen?
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, because it goes into, you know, apparently, you know, his wife has left him, you know, and
when they call him, he's just like in his bunker, like drinking beer and is like short. It just looks horrible. And he's like, yeah. And then it was funny because it'll come back later on because he finally admits to Earl, like, yeah, she's not coming back. She called me and told me I needed to send her the HK-91.
Savage.
Yeah. But then later on when we get to, like, the fifth movie, which we'll talk about shortly, when Travis, Jamie Kennedy's character, shows up and tries to convince Bert to, like, let him, you know, join him on his adventure, he's like, hey, I picked up this, and pulls out this HK-91. He's like, if you let me come on the mission, I'll let you have the HK. And then when he's like, you know, thinks he's dying, he's like recording a video. He's like, Heather, I just want you to know if I don't make it out, I miss you. I mainly miss the HK-91, but also you to a lesser extent.
Oh, God.
Just like the weird bits of continuity they've put throughout like the series. Because as you see, every time in the following movies when they go to Bert's bunker, there's a bricked up portion of the wall where that original graboid like busted through that's like a different color than the rest of the wall where he had to fix it. And then he has the graboid mounted on the wall like a trophy.
I mean, that's a hell of a trophy, though. I mean,
yeah,
you're talking about hunting big game.
Yeah, some taxidermists made some money on that one.
Well, Bert probably taxidermied it himself.
True.
If he's a man of the world, he would know how to do it.
But yeah, I mean, I kind of like those subtle throwbacks. Like, even though there's not direct correlation, it's like, we really haven't forgotten about these, you know, previous films.
Oh, but I love that one quote of Bert's when he's hiding in, like, the scoop of a small bulldozer, like a bobcat or something. And he's surrounded by shriekers, and he's yelling at Earl up on the roof. He's like, if someone had given me proper intel, we'd be down here with some small arms, automatic, preferably belt-fed. And then he's like, but no, I'm out of ammo. And then, like, and the freaking one shrieker just kind of, like, actually starts, sounds like it's laughing. And he's just like, shut up!
Yes. So, you know, the kind of reoccurring gag in this movie is, all right, so the shriekers, they sense heat. You know, so how do you mask your body heat? You got to make yourself cold. How do you make yourself cold? Freaking, you know, hose yourself with a fire extinguisher. So does that actually work?
No.
Yeah, I think I've seen an episode of Mythbusters where they were trying to beat, like a thermal alarm, and they tried that. They, you know, it worked for, like, about a minute until the, like, yeah, your body heat just warms up. It, like, did not last long. Definitely would not have lasted as long as it did for Earl, who, you know, tries to go in and, like, set off a bomb in Bert's truck and gets trapped in there. So he ends up just throwing the bomb in the truck and running. And Bert's like, where's the bomb? Oh, I just tossed it in your truck. Oh, we got to run farther. It's going to be big. There's 2,000 pounds of explosives. And, like, they all run away. They stop hunting. But he's like, no, bigger. Keep running. Keep running.
It's like somebody goes into, like, a building or something, like, no, that's not going to work, you know? So they eventually take cover. And the other running gag is if you're hunting graboids, always bring an umbrella.
Yes. Oh, because, like, yeah, when they blow them up, it rains goo.
All right. So we had the graboids, which sense vibration.
Yep.
And then the shriekers.
Sense heat.
That sense heat, but not vibration anymore.
Nope.
Because they're above ground.
Because they're above ground now. So, okay. So, Tremors is now just the name of the movie because it's not actually a thing anymore.
It was for, you know, the first 30 minutes or so of the movie. It was half Tremors.
Just want to make sure I have the scorecard right.
Yeah. Then we get to the third film, 2001's Back to Perfection.
Which should have just been, they should have just gone ahead and named it Ass Blasters. Like, I don't know how many more times you can say Ass Blasters. And,
Ass Blasters comes up several times. I'll say that I haven't seen anything past two. So,
but
apparently this is now the next step in the evolution of the
Graboid.
So basically here you have the, you know, the Shrieker, which is, I don't know. You seen Jurassic Park?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
They're the raptors, I guess.
Well, no, whatever the little, you know, dinosaurs are that, you know, fucking pick at your legs and stuff like that. They're like the chihuahuas.
Pick your leg off.
Yeah.
Well, they evolve into a flight, because apparently the third stage of the Graboid, it grows, like, not really wings, but kind of
It has wings, so it can glide. But yeah,
its blood is kind of almost alien like, where it's explosive. So it farts flame and uses that to propel itself and then glide.
You're kidding me.
And those lay graboid eggs. So that's how it.
So this is now the final stage of the evolution.
So the graboid becomes the shriekers, who eat and expand as much as possible, then turn into the shriekers that can fly farther out and drop the eggs. So they basically want an excuse
to call something ass blasters in a movie.
Oh, and they actually make the reference, because you know the first time they encounter it, it's like, well, this is new. What do we call it? You know, so you know once again, and. Tremors formula, what do you have? You've got Bert, you've got...
That was the cool part. This one, because in the second one, Bert is, like, filming, like, a blog, pretty much, as he's, like,
he's riding making around. A survival series.
Yeah, and so in this one, it starts off, he's now, like, basically a celebrity monster hunter, and he's down in Argentina fighting, like, a whole bunch of shriekers, and he has a... twin 50 cal anti-aircraft emplacement mounted in the back of his deuce and a half to just mow down. He finally gets the guns he needs for he's like got the proper intel. So when you have the proper intel, anything is possible.
So now this is now no longer just, you know, a mining and small town problem. This is now a worldwide epidemic where these creatures are everywhere.
But once again though, like it never seems to. You know, so you got Perfection, you've got the outbreak in Mexico, you have the Shrieker report in Argentina. Now, you know, we're getting reports again that, you know, Perfection is back under attack, so...
Yeah, well, he returns home after this, and what's cool is they brought back, other than Earl and Val, who apparently Earl made enough money in Tremors 2 that... him and Grady actually started their Graboid amusement park that they had planned on doing.
Which is basically a Graboid safari. We can't really say amusement park.
Well, no. They're not in it because they left and built their amusement park wherever, but there's a new guy in town named Jack, played by Sean Christian, who has started a kind of a safari tour where he has like fake Graboid attacks for tourists and stuff, and the town has kind of become one of those little roadside tourist attractions.
Tourist trap.
And, you know, there's now... Okay. Jody, who is Walter's niece, who has taken over the shop since he got ate in the first movie. But Miguel, the Mexican guy from the first movie, is back. Even the mom and daughter from the first movie are back. And, you know, like 21, you know, the little 12-year-old girl's now like in her 20s.
Yep.
And which I didn't realize, speaking of the Jurassic Park references, she's also the little girl from the first Jurassic Park movie. Yeah. So pretty much everyone who was still alive, minus Earl and Val, return
for the third movie. So this is now 11 years after the Graboid attack.
And they've not seen one since then. But
so
three more
over
show
11 years, one person of note moves into town and starts a tourist trap.
Yeah. And then somehow Graboids return 11 years later. But as Bert's ready to
go
on a hunting spree.
They're just following Bert.
Yeah.
You know?
He sounds like... bad luck.
Well, what is funny is, like, in, you know, we kind of talked about weird government stuff. You know, the government shows up and, like, oh no, the Graboid is now considered an endangered species because you've wiped out most of the known, you know, so that now these last three are the only ones we have. So
that truly seems legit. I can buy into
that. Well, you know,
so unless you can capture one for science, we're going to turn this whole valley into a. You know, a wildlife
reserve
and move all of y'all out. So Bert reluctantly agrees to one for him.
But, you know, the funny part is, all right, so it's Mindy's mom that calls the government agency because they think Bert's, you know, on the loose. He's talking about, you know, apparently he got the town, you know, seismographs and everything else. And, you know, 11 years, nothing's happened. People haven't maintained the equipment. And Bert's like, you know, had you had done what I told you, we would be prepared. So, you know, Mindy's mom basically calls in the feds and, you know, they're going through the spill of, you know, what you just said. And, you know, Bert looks over and he's like, eminent domain.
He's like, and y'all all thought I was paranoid. And they're like, we didn't think you were paranoid. And the Mexican's like, I thought you were paranoid. Not anymore. You're right.
Yeah, because basically the Mexican was given rights, you know, that, hey, I can hunt and kill anything that is a threat to my herd of cattle. And
they're like, well, the guy that told you that reports to this guy, and that guy reports to me, and I say you can't kill the Graboids. And he's like, fuck. But then they're like, you know, like, all right, if you capture one, we'll let y'all stay. So they, you know, go out and Bert tries to capture one because there's an albino one that seems to follow him. And they even make some, like, Moby Dick references where, yes, like, he's at his house and he's, you know, graboid proofed his and put like a concrete barrier around his house, and it kind of pops up on the fence line and he's like, call me Ishmael. And he's like, if you would be so kind as to lean across my property line so I could kill you and call it self-defense, I would appreciate that. But yeah, like, apparently the government guys, they try to trap one while Bert's trying to trap his. But they fail at it, and it becomes Shriekers, who then become Ass Blasters. And they're like, oh shit, there's a third evolution of these things, because new movie, you gotta up the stakes somehow.
Yeah, because we can't have more of the same, so we gotta do something else.
But I gotta hand it to the guy trying to run the safari, though. I mean, that's pretty ingenious. I mean, he's got, you know, his counterpart, you know, off in the distance, you know, basically running at the crowd, just doing a blast every once in a while.
He's got like an air compressor with dirt in it, so it makes it look like the little, you know, dust puffs of the graboid coming through until an actual graboid shows up and eats him. And eats a couple of the tourists, too, because they all think it's part of the show. And he's got like fence posts and stuff rigged to like fall down when he hits. And he's got like a fake radar on his truck that he can convince them that, you know,
there's VHS tape and then the kill switch to make it seem like
it won't start. And then he gets them all trapped on a rock and be like, well, as long as we're up here, it's kind of hot. Like, would you like to buy some beers? genius businessman. It's kind of funny, the whole, like, they even brought back the annoying kid from the first one, who is now like a real estate guy who's wanting to buy all the land and turn it into like condos and stuff. And it's like pretty much everyone came back, at least for parts of the movie, until they got eaten.
Yes.
So they came back to be killed off.
Just Miguel did not make it through. All the original cast died. Only people else that got, you know, killed were the government workers and a couple random tourists.
God.
And poor Bert, when they're like, they go back to his house to while he's having an argument with Melvin, one of the graboids shows up and tries to eat him, but he jumps into like a 55-gallon drum and it just swallows him whole. So they have to lure it back to Bert's house so it runs into the wall and dies, and then cuts him out of the worm with a chainsaw.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, I definitely feel like Sharknado took some notes from that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I just like, he's like, let's not tell anyone about this. God. Keep this between ourselves. It's kind of embarrassing the great hunter gets swallowed.
But, I mean, you know, I mean, hell, 55-gallon drum, you get swallowed whole, and, you know, you make the 2-3-mile trip back to where you are, and, you know, like, I thought Bert had met his demise when he's like, out of oxygen, Bert out, you know, over the radio, and, you know, I was kind of like, damn, is that the end? That's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, man, it's kind of like Samuel Jackson getting eaten by sharks. I mean, it's like, you expect him to be the hero at that point. If he went out at that, it would have been like, oh my god, anybody can die in this film.
So, yeah, it did.
All right, so just back to make sure I had the scorecard correct. We have the Ass Blasters. Yep. I think I'm the only person that hasn't said it yet.
Well, congratulations. Welcome to the club.
There we go.
Sounds like a bad porno coming from you.
Ass Blasters. Not that con.
And then we have the albino,
which they name
El Blanco.
El Blanco.
Because they are so great at naming things. Yes.
But
does that one ever turn into...
No, because that one just lays eggs that bring graboids back. So the
albino one just lays eggs. Think of it
like the queen. Eggs. Yeah, it's basically the queen.
Oh,
I'm just here to lay eggs.
It's the fully grown graboid.
So okay, so this is a fully grown Ass Blaster who just lays at. It's lost its wings apparently, and you know what? Never mind.
Yeah, it gets
never mind.
Oh, but yeah, I like they finally kill off most of the Ass Blaster, because one thing, like I said, the Shriekers, when they eat, they multiply. So Bert didn't, you know, prepare the roof of his house for incursion. So one of them lands inside of his bunker, and he's like, if it eats all my MREs, we're just going to have like an ass blaster blitzkrieg. So we got to blow this place up. And he ends up blowing up his whole house. Well, then right after they get out, somebody calls him like, hey, Bert, we just fed one of these ass blasters and just goes into a food coma. Like, it doesn't multiply. No, they just go to sleep. All you got to do is feed it. And they're like, fuck, I just blew up my entire bunker.
I just blew up all the food.
Yeah, he is.
For no reason.
Once again, missing critical intel.
Get you in trouble every time.
Truth.
But I do like at the after they kill them all, you know, Bert kind of like, you know, figures he's has this watch that has like some kind of sonic connection with, like, so it's always 100% accurate because it, you know, has hypersonic connection with some big atomic clock somewhere. And he finally realized that's why he's getting followed by the Graboids, is because his watch is giving off a signal. So Jack tapes it to the back of an ass blaster, and it gets eaten by the last Graboid. So they end up, like, you know, kind of adopting El Blanco as like the town mascot, and they're like, well, as long as he's here, this whole area's you know, the government's going to like help us Graboid proof the thing, so we can actually live side by side with him, and it's going to keep the real estate from Delphers from taking the town and turning it into condos, because now we're living in a federally protected preserve.
Wildlife preserve. Oh, God.
Oh.
Yeah, it all came full circle. So, I mean, the way that they fought the, you know, ass blasters was, you know, kind of, you know, amusing in itself with the whole flaming arrows and everything else. And, I mean.
And even to connect it back to the original movie, they end up, you know, being chased to a junkyard, and they're out of ammo and out of guns because Bert's blown up his house. They're like, how do we, what do we do? We're screwed. And finally, he's like, dude, you ever built potato guns? If we can, you know, build some kind of potato gun, it just runs off of, you know, some kind of explosive liquids, put some gas in it for a propellant, and we'll build flaming arrows. So he's like, I know where we can get some propellant. And so he goes and finds this trailer in the junkyard and feels around and finds like a bottle of whiskey. And he's like, he's like, the first guy that was killed in the first time was, you know, the town drunk Earl.
Oh,
and
once Edgar. Yeah.
And he's like, and once he died, they brought his trailer to the junkyard, and he always had liquor stashed somewhere.
So they brought the trailer and left the whiskey there.
Yeah, it was hidden inside like a hole in the wall.
Yeah, so like years. This film here, like, they basically, you know, once they get pinned down in the junkyard, then it's, well, all right, we got to scavenge. So, you know, basically everybody splits up. One person's in charge of getting the pipe, another person the material to make the arrows, and, you know, Earl in charge of going and getting the propellant.
Which is funny is because Earl's looking for the gas, and the one girl finds a trailer full of, like, gasoline and turpentine, which would have been, you know, they wouldn't need the whiskey if they had all that, but then they end up locking one of the ass blasters inside it, so when it farts, it blows itself up.
Oh. So, yeah, as your, you know, reaction there, there is some entertainment value to be had if you're just looking for a quirky, I want to watch some cheesy straight-to-DVD movies.
The first three are actually watchable. I mean, they come on TV all the time. You can actually find them on YouTube. But yeah, then it, like most long-running series, it starts getting ridiculous because the fourth movie, we get a prequel. It goes back to the 1800s.
Which is weird because
Fine year of 1889.
Well, I mean, you know, so the gold rush apparently, you know, is really what, you know, I guess put perfection on the map is.
Which
you
was
know.
Known as Rejection at the time.
Yes. You know, so the town originally was recalled Rejection. Like, I'm not. Even and the little kid's like, man, we couldn't have come up with a better name.
Yeah, and Bert, or Michael Gross plays Bert's great great grandfather, Hiram Gummer, who owns the mine and apparently comes to town because Graboids has started eating his miners, and he's come to figure out what's going on.
Well, I don't.
And he's kind of like a prissy guy, doesn't know anything about guns.
So he plays his own grandfather?
Yes.
Great grandfather.
Yes.
Yeah. So basically, you know.
Just so I'm clear.
He's the only one that returns for this fourth.
You know,
movie.
Production on the mine stops. You know, the miners that weren't killed, you know, pretty
don't
much
go back.
Flee and don't want to go back. So he's there to figure out why they've stopped production and get to the source of the attacks and get rid of it and get the mine producing again. And, you know, the whole, you know, this is kind of where I was, you know, making the corporate, you know, kind of greed comment earlier, you know, was...
Yeah, because when he shows up, he's just kind of a greedy douchebag. And, well, he's, and like, he's also, like, never, doesn't know nothing about guns. He's definitely not Bert. And he even hires a, when he finds out that there are these monsters eating people, he hires a gunslinger played by Billy Drago, who's been, like, a badass, you know, either a bad guy in pretty much every movie, as this Black Hand Kelly is his gunman he's hired yes. to take on the Graboids. And he kind of teaches him how to be, you know, like, you're going to need to learn how to shoot if you're going to live in the Old West, like, and kind of teaches yeah. him to man
this,
up a little
bit. This isn't
bit.
New York anymore, you know. We don't have tabs. We don't have, you know, these luxuries, you know, afforded to you that you're used to having, so... You know, either shit or get off the pot. But I love that whole scene where, you know, Kelly first shows up, you know, and he sits down at the bar, you know, obviously there's a storm going on in the background and stuff. And, you know, somebody's like, you know, well, how do we know you can shoot? And he's like, well, go get me that apple. You know, I guess everybody's expecting him to, you know, somebody to throw the apple or put the apple on, you know, their head and him shoot. No, it doesn't happen at all. He just takes a bite out of the apple, and everybody's on the edge of their seat and stuff. It's just,
oh, God.
You know, he's so playing into the, I'm a badass outlaw, and, you know, these people are afraid of me, and I know it, so I'm just going to fuck with them a little.
But, yeah, he eventually gets eaten, and, you know, Hiram has to go out, and he originally pusses out and is like, screw the mind, I'm leaving. But then he hears that, you know, there's more Graboids headed to town, and he kind of feels bad, so he goes and buys a shitload of guns and comes back and convinces the town folk, like, all right, if y'all help me kill all these Graboids, I will give y'all all a percentage of the mine, and we'll split everything, and, you know, we'll, you know, build you a proper store, who is apparently, you know, Walter's ancestors, and, you know, it kind of makes all these deals with everybody to help him, you know, kill off the last of the Graboids. It, you know, has some badass old school old west weaponry. It even has like a punt gun, one of those giant yes. ass cannons. But I do like at the end when he's kind of hooking up with like the school teacher or whatever, and she's like, and he's now like, I'm all about guns, like, you can see the future, Bert. And she's like, well, I took part of the mine money and bought you a present, and gives him like an old Colt Gatling gun. And he's like, yes. Like, and the, you know, Gummer line is born from there on.
Yeah, and, you know, so this one here was, you know, just... I don't know. It definitely wasn't my favorite in the yeah, lineup.
This was also directed by, whatever, S.S. Wilson, who directed Aftershock.
So, you yeah, know...
$5 million to make this movie?
Yeah.
God, I figured it would have been on a budget of like $500,000 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, sounds like it.
And that, when we was researching this, a fifth movie popped up that I had no idea existed, but it's on Netflix. Came out in 2015, directed by Michael Paul, starring, of course, Michael Gross, and then also Jamie Kennedy as Travis B. Welker, titled Bloodline.
And this time, we are now in Africa, fighting Africanized Graboids.
Yeah, so now of they're, course. Like, really huge. The tentacles can actually depart from the host body and attack as, like, anaconda things. And the,
you know, Africa.
The nice. Grab, the, whatever, shriek, their version of a shrieker is just gigantic. Yeah, it's, like, I think every long-running series eventually runs out of ideas and goes to Africa. I mean, we had Shaft in Africa. We had Ernest
hey,
Goes to Africa.
Shut your mouth.
What? Just talking about Shaft. Yeah, freaking Ernest went to Africa. Even Ace Ventura, Pet Detective ended up in Africa eventually. It's like, it's where franchises go to die.
But, you know, I gotta say that, you know, we made the references to Jurassic Park. This movie, almost verbatim, you can pick out scenes and say, yep, that came from Jurassic Park. And probably the most iconic is, you know, think back to the original Jurassic Park movie.
Yes,
the first
the
one
scene.
In the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, and this movie here follows that method almost to a T.
There's a small child and another person hiding in a kitchen, and you see a kitchen door with a single window in it, and then there's like an African ass blaster trying to get in.
And then it comes in, and what do they do? They zoom in on the claw, tapping like the raptor claw.
It looks like raptor claws. Yeah, I mean, it's almost a direct shot-for-shot ripoff.
So they literally lifted the entire scene and put it in this.
But it turns out the people that hired Bert to hunt this, because they come, he's still, at this point, like I said, you've seen him appear on videos and him doing his like video blogs. Well, it's kind of gone up into the current culture of pop culture, where now Bert is like a YouTube celebrity making these survivalist videos. He's like has a whole series of survivalist videos, and his cameraman quits, and this other, you know, basically an extreme sports guy who's also a combat photographer who's been in like Afghanistan and all these other people show up, and he's like, "You're a legend. I want to work with Bert. I want to be your new cameraman."
And this is a thing that, you know, I thought about while I was watching this. This is Jurassic Park meets Triple X.
Yeah, pretty much, because they had to put some extreme motorcycle stunts in there to help. Oh, yeah.
And the guy like looked very similar.
Almost unbelievable.
Was one of the guys from Sons of Anarchy in this film?
I don't know.
You know, the guy with the black hair, I don't remember. Maybe his character name was John on Sons of Anarchy. I can't remember. But
I don't mind. Yeah, I don't remember seeing him.
But I kept, you know, seeing him, and I was like, is that, you know, the same person or not?
And then there's this crazy old, like, bush pilot guy who has, he's like the only... The thing is, you know, this movie is so low budget because there's zero practical effects in this, and which what made the other movies cool with the practicals. This one has gone 100% CGI. And then they write into the story that, you know, these people hire Bert, they say they're wildlife management guys from Africa, but turns out they're basically poachers, and they were trying to capture wildlife to sell to zoos and whatnot. And illegally, and he also...
Somebody thinks we should get a graboid.
Yeah. But
the graboid black market.
But, you know, obviously...
And that
they
is actually a reference in the film, is, you know... And, I mean, they even followed the Jurassic Park antic up until, you know, they steal the egg.
Yeah, there's a guy stealing an egg or to try to, like, sell it and breed graboids. But the thing is, they obviously couldn't afford the big explosives and weaponry that they've been in all the other movies. So they have this thing like, oh, they confiscated all of Bert's guns when he tried to come to South Africa, so they wouldn't let him import any of his guns. So they only have, like, what cheap farm guns that they could dig up for him to use to grab points. It's like an old 45 Peacemaker and like a shotgun, and just, they're like, we can't afford the gun budget, we're going to have to give him cheap stuff.
But
I don't know how I feel about this movie.
Yeah, even the gunshots are like CGI. I mean, they couldn't even afford blanks in this movie. I mean, like the muzzle blasts were all CGI. Like obvious.
This version seems like just a comedy of errors in the production of it
altogether. What's even worse, I mean, the title is Bloodline, and when the guy's trying to convince Bert to let him go, he's like, you know, you've been around, like, he's like, where are you from? He's like, I'm from, like, what was it, Daytona or something like that, or somewhere in Florida, and he's like, yeah, there's a good gun show down there. And I'm like, 5 minutes of the movie, I'm like, that guy's going to be Bert's son. The name is, you know, freaking Bloodlines, and they've both been to the same town. And sure enough, later on in the movie, he's like talking about
his mom and, you know.
Yeah, and he's like, really? Like, because he was like, Bert was listening to some music, and he's like, why are you playing this old, like, hippie stuff? And he's like, oh, no, I just kind of like it. He's like, yeah, like, do you remember, you know, going to that gun show back, was about 40 years ago? And he's like, yeah. He's like, remember meeting a hippie chick named whatever? And he's like, yeah. He's like, do you know her? He's like, yeah, I call her mom. And he's like, what? I'm like, I called that 5 minutes in. Yeah. That's going to be Bert Jr. there.
But I do kind of like the whole thing where, you know, he eventually warms up to the idea and says, you know what, there might be some truth here, but I'm going to need a paternity test.
Yeah. Oh,
because I was kind of having some flashbacks to Smokey and the Bandit. Like, there's no way you came from my loins.
Because that was the whole thing. He's like, dude, you're going all wrong about this, you know, trying to be a YouTube celebrity. Like, you need marketing and, you know, all this other stuff. Like, I can help you with that. You know, I know new technology and, you know, the internet and stuff.
He's like, do you know Twitter?
Yeah. He's like, you should be doing all these, like, Instagramming and all this other stuff. So at the end, he's finally like, you know, after he's kind of grown to like the kid's not a dork, he's like, all right, you said you could fix me. Like, how do we get started? And he's like, shit, there's nothing that needs to be fixed about you, Pops. He's like, quit calling me Pops.
Oh, man. But right. Yeah, I mean, this was by far the most Jurassic Park-esque of them all. But you know what? I got to say, though, that, you know, to me, I didn't find it completely unwatchable. I mean, coming from the fourth film and jumping to this one,
well, that's what you're basing it off of. That's a very low bar. Well,
it's if you have nothing to do, it might be worth a couple hours of your time.
Although I did see as
if you can only watch three, watch the first trilogy.
I did see as we're talking that, you know, the number four had a budget of what? $5 million,
something like that. Like
I think this one had half of that budget.
It looked like it.
But yeah,
so available for you now to watch on demand on Netflix.
you too can experience the Queen Bitch.
Oh yeah,
which is what they've dubbed the main graboid.
Oh god, you gotta be kidding me.
Oh yeah. And it's laying all kind of eggs.
I want to say that I'm completely insulted by this movie.
It's very much Aliens.
It takes a lot to insult me, and I think I'm completely insulted by this movie.
But from a cultural perspective, I mean, you get African tribesmen, you know, that, you know, are out there
please
doing that
wearing loincloths.
Like, oh, yes. They go to a tribe party and witness a tribal dance. Oh.
But you know,
in 2015,
but you could tell that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't National Geographic because they were fully clothed. You know, if it was National Geographic, everybody would be butt ass naked.
And the head doctor of the preserve is one of the a tribeswoman, but she's not in traditional. They actually make her look like a scientist. So they didn't go that like
they
racial
didn't
stereotype.
That far. Not to sidetrack our talk, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. So they didn't go all the way stupid. So as we kind of wrap up.
Although I am happy that every woman in the movie, at the very least, has been some sort of scientist. That's something, I guess.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, you know.
Every version,
I mean,
the woman is the geologist or the doctor.
Badass, because she, I mean, she run around with like a bow and arrow, like killing freaking shriekers and ass blasters with a bow and arrow. And when Bert like runs
very
out of
Tomb Raider esque, very when, Tomb Raider.
And when Bert runs out of like crappy gun, she's like, "Here, I kind of snuck this in. If you want to borrow," and it gives him like some like badass rifle. Yeah, I'm like, "All right, this girl's legit."
And whoever, you know, very kind good. Of you know her love interest, you know, the dude that's, you know, always looking out for the little girl. When he walks out with a shotgun and he's got the bandolier of 12 gauge ammo, I'm like, he's ready to rock and roll.
Oh yeah, he's manned up.
Yeah. But yeah, if you've got 90 minutes to burn, luckily, you know what I gotta say though, that throughout the entire Tremor franchise, at no point did they decide that, oh, we need to do a 3-hour movie. They said, nope, we got about 120 minutes worth of material, and they made that 120 minutes work. So nice. It's not like they tried to drag it out for
true. And since we're about to wrap the Tremors talk up, I want to tack on that as we're talking and then reading through this, there is a sequel in the works for the next Tremors. Michael Gross apparently announced it back in September of last year that they are working on Tremors 6. Michael Gross and Jamie Kennedy are projected to be back in it.
They're going to do like another TV series, and supposedly Kevin Bacon has agreed to come back for the series.
Are we going
to
talk about the TV series, or is that out of scope for today?
Well, like I said, we're kind of out of time at this point. This series wasn't... I mean, it was pretty good. Had a lot of people from the third movie. It only lasted a season on Sci-Fi.
Wasn't it?
But yeah, so they're bringing back another series, and they've got Kevin Bacon supposedly involved somehow. You know, I mean, he may be a guest star, but he's coming back, folks. But as we wrap this up, got any final thoughts
Bacon.
On the cigar here, Brad?
Yeah. Huge fan of the Amazon Basin. This here, you know, it remained complex. And this is still a cigar that, you know, my taste buds are enjoying this. I mean, you know, like I said, that touch of lingering spice, you know, it's not a blast in your face. It's subtle. It's on the back of the palate. And, you know, it comes and it goes. And, you know, this has just been a phenomenal cigar.
Yeah, if there's anything I can say bad about it is the fact that it only comes in that whatever Robusto size. It's a little short for me. Like, the original Amazon Basin was a bigger cigar. It had, like, a longer life to it. But this right here, if you need a quick smoke, I mean, you get a good hour and a half out of it. It's not too, too small. But, yeah, it's... Yeah, I would like a bigger cigar so I could enjoy this longer.
I mean, that's the only thing I would say is I want more of it, and, you know, I'm going to continue buying these. In fact, this may be, you know, another one of those that I'll add to the, you know, daily rotation.
As long as it lasts.
Yeah,
as long as it lasts. Because it's
3,000 boxes or something, right?
All right. With that, we will wrap it up and be right back.
It's all what they call a reality show, all about survival. A lot of city folk running around half naked, bitching and moaning and bad-mouthing each other.
Bunch of crybabies. Here in Perfection, Nevada, home to the 20-ton Precambrian predator known as the Graboid, we're too busy trying to stay alive than to spend our time whining about it. You want to learn how to survive? Come visit my reality.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's
good
time
to be back.
Drink some beer.
Damn, it's hot 30. Out here.
You know, so if you're like Bert and you're building a bunker to survive the apocalypse or the occasional Graboid attack, what's the one thing you need to stock in your survival kit? What are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, this week we have a little special something-something from Wild Heaven. This is going to be emergency drinking beer. So if you're out on your Graboid safari and find yourself in a Jeep that won't start and stranded on the rocks, convenient to just grab one of these bad boys out of the cooler. Good all-purpose 4% ABV, 10 IBU. Boy, I tell you what.
Yeah. This is perfect for your... emergency survival kit, your go bag, whatever you need.
And their marketing kind of follows. I mean, the can, there's no fancy graphics. This is a plain yellow can that says emergency drinking beer. Contents, beer.
Solid.
So, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, very, you know, much of a, you know, pill style season ale is what they're calling this. You know, so expect your... you know, a little bit of citrus zest, a little sea salt, lemongrass.
It's a very low ABV. I mean, it's only 4%, so it's not gonna get you hammered unless you drink a lot of them. But it's a nice, refreshing beer on a hot summer day.
I mean, I can definitely see this is a great, you know, I'm doing some yard work, just want something to wet the tongue. You know,
yeah. This is a very easy drinking.
It'll keep you hydrated when you're on your beer. Rock.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, nothing real fancy this week. Just all right, boys, bottoms up and chug.
Yep. You know, beers. You know, it's a very pale colored beer. You know,
pilsnery pale beer. But like I said, it's. For a 4%, I mean, it's a tasty beer.
No, I mean, it's not bad at all. And I mean, you know, definitely, you know, not much hop bitterness whatsoever. You know, almost the zero. Prominent note to me is the citrus that's, you know, there on the tongue. And, you know, that just adds a little bit of a something to keep it interesting.
Oh, definitely a hot weather. I need something to refresh myself. Drink.
I mean, I can definitely see this, you know, camping trip, you're out by the fire, it's summer, you know, you don't really want something, you know, super heavy like a stout or anything. I mean, this right here is a great alternative to the traditional, oh, I'll just, you know, grab me a Bud Light or something. Yeah. You know, if you want to, you know, have something that, you know, is...
and still drink a craft beer.
Yeah, you know, craft beer. And I mean, you know what? And every time we do a Wild Heaven beer, I think I say this, but I have yet to have a bad beer, you know. And, you know, whether it's, you know, one of the IPAs that, you know, I'm not really a huge fan of. I mean, I haven't found anything that I'm like, I can't drink that again.
No, this is one of those, if you're out mowing the lawn on the riding lawnmower kind of
kind of beers. Or surviving the apocalypse.
Or you're stranded in a gorge.
Like I said, it keeps you hydrated when you're on your rock. So what are you going to rate this one on the untapped scale?
You know what?
That we never actually update.
I mean, hey, we talk about it, right? That's the thought that counts. You know, for me, I'll give this one about a 4. I mean, you know, maybe 4.5. I mean, not that it's anything bad. It's just nothing fancy, which I wasn't going for fancy. So I was going for if I find myself in a survival situation, what am I going to grab out of my go bag? This is probably going to be it, because that bright yellow can right there, I guarantee you, is going to stand out.
Yeah, you know, after you drink them all, you can use them to make your, like, SOS signal in the desert.
Just open the can up it.
Yep, exactly. I mean, this is a good, solid drinking beer.
I mean, you know what? They always say, you know, pop smoke. You know what? Pop the top, pour the beer, toss the can. You got yourself a signal.
I wish I could open one. But I'm halfway through mine. No, if I would rate this, I'd probably 3.5. It's your basic beer.
Yeah, it's good. If you want a nice, simple,
basic beer, this is what you get.
Basic beer.
Yep.
It's basic.
It's better than that Dragon Con beer we had last year.
Oh, God.
I hope they're not making a new version of that this year. And with that, we'll be right back. And we're back. It's time for some science. And since we've been talking about Bert and his big guns, let's start off science talking about some new developments in naval guns.
Is this the laser weapon that I keep seeing so much about? Oh,
freaking lasers.
Well, we got that, and then we have some other guns. But yeah, let's talk about the, you know, for when Skynet takes over and there's the hunter killers flying through the air. The Navy has released a demo video of its new laser drone killing technology. They've mounted this laser on a couple ships now, and they released a demo video of it shooting down a drone, because drones are becoming more commonplace and they can be easily obtained. They may not be like the big, fancy, expensive Predator drones like we use, but you know, a terrorist can load a good-sized RC plane full of explosive and try to fly it into something. So with these laser technologies, it's basically can be operated by a crew of 3 and only pretty much runs off a small generator. Right now it's been mounted on the USS Ponce. They're using it kind of as a test vehicle for it. But the thing is, with this technology, the things you normally have to deal with when you're shooting a gun, like wind speed and range, are like, it doesn't matter. It travels at the speed of light, and wind and rain, there's no bullet drop to compensate for, or so you really don't even have to lead a target like you would with traditional weaponry. It's pretty much a point and shoot system. They say it like I said, it travels at the speed of light and almost instantly superheats whatever it touches, so it can like literally just cut the wings off a drone, whether it wants to capture it or destroy it. And the other big highlight of it is it's fairly cheap. I mean, they do cost $40 million per unit, but each shot only cost about $1 instead of multi-thousands and thousands of dollars that normal, say, missiles and whatnot would cost. This thing, it's $1 a shot. You can rack up some scores.
I'm waiting on a, smaller version of this that, then becomes a rifle and just, look, burned a hole through my enemy.
Well, we did talk about them starting the Space Corps. So this, working this down to a squad based weapon that they can supply our Space Marines with.
And I was looking for shotgun ammo the other day and ran across, like, they've actually got, shotgun rounds now that are designed specifically for drones that basically cast out a little net and, will tangle up the propellers and
really?
Stuff. Yeah.
But then again, some good old double-op buck will take care of it.
Yeah, I mean,
Well, then you get here we're going for double-op buck in a populated area. That's a whole different ball of wax.
I want to go for less than lethal.
That and if you capture your drone, hey, free drone. Instead of a free bucket of parts if you're using traditional shotgun ammo. But that's not the only new thing the Navy has demoed this week. Have you ever heard of railguns? That's kind of a big sci-fi staple that they've talked about. It's a weapon that, you know, does not use conventional explosives or anything like that. It basically uses magnets to speed up a bullet and launch it at super high speeds. They've been experimenting with the Office of Naval Research in Dull Green, Virginia. Showed how, you know, the multi-shot, you know, rapid-fire version of this that they're getting ready to actually kind of move into the mounting it on a ship and doing some field tests with it. But this thing will has a range of 100 miles and fires a projectile at Mach 6.
Yeah, I mean, railguns have been, you know, the wet dream of the Navy for a decade or longer.
And like with the laser weapon, it's, you know, expensive to build but cheap to shoot. So
yeah, spend once, cry once.
Yeah. And like I said, with, you know, the 100-mile range and, you know, not having to store conventional explosives and whatnot on the ship, it's actually a safer weapon for, you know, the ships to carry.
I mean, until they come out with a person carryable version like they had in the movie Eraser, I'm disinterested.
Oh, the Eraser railguns. I completely forgot all about
that. You didn't make that connection? Oh,
with the little smoke rings as it fired for some reason.
And the X-ray sight that can see through, you know, walls and people's bodies, apparently, and lock onto a heart. Another such nonsense.
Ah, yes. Bad sci-fi science. That sounds like a Stephen Crenade panel for
that's a winning combination for us here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like,
I mean, I'm sure that's probably in, you know, one of the, you know, weapons panels, you know, just,
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure the
eraser railgun is a standard in most weapons con panels.
And thing too is like the size of this thing when you see the video of it. It's, you know, kind of reminiscent of the big cannons you see on ships, but very high tech.
And, you know, it's a easy step once they can get that done, arming, you know, spacecraft, space weapons, because you're not having to deal with propellant issues.
Yep. The less you have to carry into space, the cheaper it is.
Well, no, I mean, you can't light propellant in,
in a zero oxygen
environment. You need some other way to generate propulsion.
Interesting.
And a magnet-based.
So when the aliens invade, we'll have some high-tech weaponry that maybe we can take them down with.
Let's go with that.
But speaking of, you know, it's not science without possible Skynet warning. Researchers shut down an AI that invented its own language.
I was going to mention, I have two stories to mention with that one. That was one of them, so thank you for getting into that one.
Yes, basically, a AI that was been in development by Facebook is started communicating with other computers in its own language. That it's no longer used English, came up with its own language that was quicker to communicate. But unfortunately, the researchers couldn't decrypt its its language. So now you have artificial intelligence communicating and negotiating with other artificial intelligence in a code that we can't read. So they haven't figured out which code means kill all humans yet. So they're like, we better shut this down because this is kind of going sideways and we are afraid we are going to lose control of our experiment.
And who didn't foresee that coming?
Thank you, Facebook.
Yeah, like that. And when they reboot, you know, Terminator again, you know, Skynet's going to be developed by Facebook or some kind of social media algorithm that eventually takes over the net.
God. I'm here to censor everything, and all creatures need censoring.
Well, you know, first we have...
Look at these cat videos while kill all of humanity.
First, Facebook gives us clickbait. Then they give us listicles where it's top 10 things that you'll blank. Number 3 will surprise you. And now they're giving us AIs that can only talk to each other and plot against us.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg is the scientist that invents Skynet.
The new they're going to change the name of Skynet in the next movie to just Facebook.
Yeah. Run, it's Facebook. Facebook became self-aware and launched all the nuclear missiles.
Well, and they already know where you go and where you hang
exactly.
out all the time.
It's already, you know, if I can, every time I Google something, I'm getting ads for whatever I was looking at, you know, weeks later. I mean, they're, you know, call me paranoid like Bert, but they're already tracking us.
Oh.
You're going to have to go off the grid.
Did you already do Roomba? Or is it on your list?
No.
Roomba is not on your list?
No. What's Roomba doing now? Okay,
so going off script, Roomba apparently is using the vacuum cleaners.
Yeah.
They are uploading the data when the device gets its firmware updates to their servers. So they are mapping out the residences and, you know, the walls and the obstacles and doorways that exist in your house, because the machine would need to know that to get around. So they are consolidating this data potentially to sell. But the fact that the Roombas that you bought to clean your house are now sending back maps.
I mean, you have the Roombas, you have your whatever Amazon Echo bots and whatever that are listening to you all the time.
You have Echoes and Google's voice assistants.
Siri is doing it. Yeah, I mean, every time I stop at a restaurant, my phone's like, would you like to review this place? Like, no, you should know I'm here. Fuck off. Goddamn Skynet.
Yeah. Earlier today, I was at a meeting for another con, and it said, hey, we know that you see that you're here. Do you want to check in? It's like, God damn it, I didn't tell you any of this.
Yeah, it's getting scary. And speaking of scientists gone amok, this sounds like the start of a Godzilla movie. We're definitely going to get some mad scientists. Floating City Project wants to become a hub for deregulated scientific research.
Because that's not a bad idea.
Yeah,
I think we've seen several movies about this, actually.
It's called the Seasteading Institute, started by Patry Friedman, and with money from Peter Thiel, who is the billionaire behind PayPal. Basically, they're building a floating city off the coast of Tahiti, and as we know, Tahiti is a magical place. But
thank you for that.
Since this thing is going to be out in international waters, they won't have to deal with any kind of local political regulations. They just have to, you know, work within international law, which is very vague. You know, it's only really kind of like, you know, basic law. There's not any kind of, like, you know, political parties and government oversight and regulation out in the middle of the ocean. So they want to be able to build this floating city where they can invite scientists to do any kind of research without any kind of government interference. Like I said, that sounds like the start of a Godzilla movie to me. If Skynet doesn't blow it up first, we're going to get giant kaiju out of Tahiti.
That, we're going to have robots communicating back to the floating, you know, research center that nobody can understand.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the robots that they're communicating will then release the kaiju
based in Tahiti.
But then we won't be able to use the giant robots to fight them because they'll be controlled by the same computers.
Yeah, the
they'll adapt the, you know, laser technology, so then we'll have
giant rail guns attached to them too.
And it's funny, this Patria Friedman, it says he is a software engineer, poker player, and political economic theorist. That sounds like the origin story of a Bond villain to me.
That sounds like a fast CV right there.
Yeah, it's going to be him versus Elon Musk who's going to take over the world.
Does he have a small cat and just pet it constantly?
I did not find that in his wiki, but this could be the next Blofeld. Like I said, if it's not Elon Musk with his Moonraker project that he's working on, it's going to be kaijus out of Tahiti by the...
There are several Bond villains, so why not both?
Yes.
James Bond versus Kaiju.
Have you seen the article about the companies that are now starting to use implant, like little microchip implanted in people's in their employees' wrists for access to the building and computer access too?
Yeah, I don't see that going horribly wrong. I mean, that sounds like a people call me paranoid.
All we do here is watch movies. I mean, we've seen this before.
Yes, like we this is what happens. You get kaijus.
A lifetime of bad B movies have, you know, prepared made me the educated man that I am today.
They have prepared us for this upcoming, and we have our emergency drinking beer to get us through it all. So,
but all it's made by robots, and the robots are going to poison our beer.
No.
Speaking of, you know, the lights going out and whatnot, I want to make you aware, coming up here pretty soon, August 21st, we're getting our first solar eclipse in a long time, and, you know, you'll be able to see it as long as you're kind of in North America and parts of South America on the 21st. But you know, also it kind of touches, is going to cut through, because you'll be able to see it, but the area that's covered by the total eclipse is, there's kind of a path starting up, I think, in Oregon and going, ending in South Carolina, but also passing through some of North Georgia. So if you're in the North Georgia area like we are, you should be able to get a good view of the eclipse when it starts. It's pretty much going to, I think, from 1:06 to 4:01, with the total eclipse being around 2:35 to 2:38.
Yeah.
If you're in the area. But warning, as you know, NASA always gives us, and there'll be a link in the show notes of where and when the best places to watch the eclipse based on your location, is don't look directly at the sun. You will burn your eyes.
Which is never a good idea anyway. But just because it's dark, all gets dark all of a sudden, doesn't mean you can then just stare up and look at it, because it's still the sun.
And if you go on to this website, there's plenty of information of how you can safely view the eclipse, you know, without staring at the sun and burning your eyes. So we need to get a
sweet set of welding goggles?
Pretty much. Or they say, you know, look through, you know, basically a focusing lens to look, you know, look onto a, because we did this in school. I think the last solar eclipse was like when I was in elementary school, and they had a thing where you had like a plate and you poked a hole in it, and then the light shining through the plate like gave you an image of the sun on another plate, and you could see the eclipse happen. But yeah, don't look directly at the sun. Just go to the website we're going to send you, and they'll tell you how to do it safely. Yep. And, or you know, Google.
There are specialized glasses, like they look like the old school 3D glasses that they sell now. They're relatively cheap to get a few of them. So spend yourself your $10, buy some safety glasses, protect your eyesight, because you can't get it back. We haven't figured out how to replace eyes yet.
Cyborg eyes.
I wish. Tell me about
that.
It.
Shoot lasers.
Yes.
I just want to see in the dark.
Kill mode. Go to instant kill mode. And with that, we'll be right back.
My name is Brian Foster.
Everything you know is wrong. Got that?
Now, the reason that I'm calling is because I have begun to suspect you don't have any ladybugs in your freezer.
Hey cuz, Roy here. So about your car.
The darkness was never empty.
There's this presence in my head.
But I'm pretty sure that the book was confiscated by cats.
You're damn right we find a lot of bodies when Foster is around.
And some people call me the Night Blogger.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
All right, so we'll go ahead and jump into it. You know, want to start off, I grew up with a, you know, television show, you know, a little something called Rocky and Bullwinkle. Used to love the shit out of it. Anyway, we learned that June Foray has actually passed away, and she is the one that, you know, actually voiced, you know, Rocky the Flying Squirrel, and, you know, passed away at the age of 99. You know, so sad times. Always loved the television show, so always try to pay homage to, you know, the people that have made lasting impressions. So, switching gears onto a positive note and some things that I'm excited about that are coming to fruition. So, you know, probably, I don't know, 8 months or so ago, we, you know, talked about a little book called Ready Player One.
Yes.
Since then, you know, we've, you know, seen, you know, some, you know, artwork for the movie. We learned that Steven Spielberg is, you know, taking the project by the iron grasp. Well, we've got our first trailer.
Hells yes. Released at San Diego Comic-Con this year. And it was one of the biggest concerns when we talked about the announcement that this was going to be a movie, is the book is so filled with pop culture references. They're like, how are they going to get the rights to all these different projects? And apparently they have, because in that 2-minute trailer, I think there's like 29, 30 different like references to other movies.
Yeah, they hit every TV show, every popular TV show in the 80s. And
yeah, I mean, after watching the video, I had to go watch a separate YouTube video where they slowed it down and pointed out every single reference just to catch it all.
Oh, I mean,
you
think
see Duke Nukem, Freddy Krueger, Harley Quinn. And there's even this big, like, NASCAR-esque race sequence where...
The DeLorean,
the freaking Christine Cadillac, the, whatever, Kira Light Cycle, the A-Team van.
The A-Team van was in there.
Even Bigfoot makes an appearance in the race. Yeah, yes. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, so, you know...
All to a sweet 80s soundtrack.
Which, I mean, you know, I mean, the book was so, you know, 80s pop culture focused that, you know, I mean, you have to... you know, capture that feel. And if anybody's going to do it, it's Steven Spielberg. And, you know, originally talking, we were like, man, that's going to be, you know, a pain to, you know, try to get all the rights and licensing and everything else that you're going to need. But, I mean...
Steven Spielberg, apparently you can make shit happen.
Yeah. And, you know...
But plus he owns probably half of those.
He probably does own, actually, most of those licenses already.
So, you know, I mean, 80 nostalgia, check. You know, my concern for it
is... The race scene to Tom Sawyer is just amazing.
Well, you know...
On, like, the Hot Wheels-looking planet with the ramps and such.
You know, so I'm wondering, you know, because so much of the world is, you know, embedded in the Oculus. So is this a live, you know, physically racing? Or is this just part of, you know, the video game to, you know, try to capture the keys?
I mean, that's obviously something from the Oasis, but yeah, it's been so while since I've read the book. I've got to reread it before I see this movie. I don't remember a giant race sequence.
And that's what I'm saying.
Unless they're like changing like some of the space battle stuff now to a, you know, a race. But I did like in that sequence, cause we know the big bad in the movie is the IOI crew.
Yep.
And they're all of their things are you know, they're like the big corporation and all their avatars are exactly the same. So you see all these guys suiting up for this race in the real world, and then it cuts to the VR, and there are these generic robot bodies, and all their cars are these generic, look like blacked out NASCARs with the IOI logo on them, and then peppered throughout, you see the actual players with, like, you know, the customized cars and characters and shit. I was like, that looks amazing.
So, you know, I'm
and even the like zero gravity dance sequence from that nightclub they go to at one point. I mean. I'm looking more forward to this than I am the next Star Wars. I'm like, I cannot wait to
shut
see this
your
movie.
Mouth.
What? I'm just talking about Shaft.
Didn't we already use that reference?
I think
yes,
we did.
But
as long as we're talking about the 80s
references. We can do that multiple times. It lives strong.
Does it work that way?
Yes.
Yes.
It's a glitch in the Matrix. Oh.
So, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know. I'm excited, you know. I won't say that this, you know, this trailer gave me exactly what I was looking for, you know. So I'm not gonna, you know, completely embrace it just yet. You know, I definitely want to see more, and as you know, it progresses.
Shut up and take my money.
I mean,
even the scenes that are in the real world where it shows the stacks looks like it's straight off the cover of the book. I mean, it's just. Everything I imagined when I was reading this book so far, it's like, it's on screen. I can't wait. But it's such a massive story. I don't know how they're going to do it in a single, unless it's a 3-hour movie. There's a lot of story to put into a single film, and I've not heard any plans to make this a trilogy or anything else.
No, I mean, but, you know, they do it all the time where they, you know, book adaptations into movies.
But,
you
I mean, cuts, but you then again, you know, make it fit. To your point, you know, make it fit. You lose a lot of great content and, you know, source material. And, you know, I often find that the movies don't quite have the same impact that the books do, you know, because of that time constraint.
Well, yeah, but it comes down to quality. I think just quality of the director and the screenwriters. And in this particular case, it's Steven Spielberg. I have confidence that if anybody can do it, this will pull it off properly.
And at its basis, this is a treasure hunting story. So it's Indiana Jones and virtual reality.
So
Steven Spielberg knows the which is the theme.
It's not something he hasn't done before.
So you know, obviously, with you know, within the nerd and geek culture, Ready Player One, you know, people know it. You know, it's starting to make more and more headlines. What about for the masses that may, you know, not know the source material or
anything?
Even
if you don't know the source material, just the sheer amount of nostalgia factor that's going to pop up. People are like, holy shit, there's the DeLorean doing drifting.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like,
people are going to want to see that just
so
for the spectacle.
If Stephen King fucks this up, Spielberg. What does that do?
Spielberg.
I'm sorry, Spielberg. I was thinking about
this is
my...
This is not a horror movie.
Not yet, horror but thriller. We are
Christine
going
there. Is in there. So, and Freddy Krueger.
True.
So, you know, if Spielberg, you know, for some unknown, fucks this up, what does that do for his career? You know, as he's such larger
probably level. Absolutely nothing.
It's
in
too
the
big
end,
to fail.
He might be too big to fail.
So, I don't know. You know, I'm just kind of playing unsold. Devil's advocate. I mean, to say that I'm not excited or anticipating, you know, would be an understatement. Or so.
No, I mean, even if the movie is reviewed to be a bomb, I have no doubt
this would
that
definitely
this will
become
be a
cult.
Box office hit.
And oh, there'll be Dragon Con panels on
even
this. Easy.
Even if it totally diverts, it's a completely different story than the source material.
And the people that
it will still be probably end up being.
I did hear one like dumbass critic was like, "They're like, oh, there's a backlash on this movie because people are saying it depends far too much on other properties." And I was like, "Do you even know the book? Because the book is pretty much all pop culture references." Like, no, it's not depending too much on pop culture references, because the book and the movie itself is nothing but a pop culture reference.
I mean, the whole premise of the movie relies on pop culture.
If they cut back on
the
references,
point
it,
to,
you
to
know,
the story,
fans
to the
of the movie would be,
of the movie.
Be
at the very least the origin of it.
So, anyway, I've created a buzz. That's all I was after. I got you fuckers talking, so maybe that, you know, gets everybody else talking, because I'm fucking excited.
True.
All right.
Are you ready, player one?
Yep. Well, so we're going to switch gears. And, you know, the reason I brought up Stephen King is we did get our first, you know, a new trailer with it. And we actually get to see Pennywise.
Legit creepy as fuck.
Legit, you know, menacing.
They've gone hardcore horror on this
I'm not a huge horror movie person, but I'm actually ready to see this.
Oh, this one looks scary.
I want
as fuck.
To see this.
Last thing is, the original movie, if you don't remember, was a TV miniseries. So they couldn't go all out with the horror aspect because it was on primetime TV. So this being, you know, an R-rated film, they can go all the way up.
And, you know, the other thing that this trailer brought to us is we actually got to hear the voice of Pennywise, not just the laughing that we got, you know, from the previous one.
And it's not, you know, Pennywise, as scary as he was, Tim Curry's voice was, clown-like. I mean, he was kind of like, hi, kids, come on in, I'm going to kill you. But this guy's like, here, take the boat. Come on, we all float down here. I'm like, nah, I ain't trusting that clown.
So, you know, September 8th is, you know, what the anticipated release date is. You know, it's another one that I'm looking forward to. I mean, you know, I grew up watching, you know, the miniseries and everything. So, switching gears, get back more on our nerd topic is we also got the Thor Ragnarok trailer.
Oh, yeah.
And
or as I like to call it, Lethal Weapon in space, because it so much looks like a buddy cop comedy at this point. And that's not a bad thing.
No,
I'm excited to see.
I mean,
it's not like it's a bad thing.
Thor and Hulk, just weird buddy cop.
I mean, it is, you know, an interesting dynamic to say the least. And you know what? I mean, you know, we've seen it a lot where, you know, I think that was kind of, you know, the downfall of, you know, a lot of up until a few years ago, you know, why comic movies weren't really as, you know, successful is because I felt like, you know, comics are fun. you know, are either they're dark and gritty or, you know, I mean, there's a certain emotion that you feel.
Yeah, as Marvel has gone on, too, they're constantly trying to reinvent themselves and do something different. So it's not the same formula time and time again. And they have added a lot of comedy to their, you know, their movies, but it's not excessive. It's fits within the storyline.
Yes. Yes, and that is one thing that they have excelled at throughout MCU.
I can't, you know, I mean, if we're, I don't want to start the MCU versus DCU debate or anything like that, but I mean, I will say that I feel far more connected to many of the Marvel characters, much more than I do so any, you know, real of the DC characters.
And the thing is, like, I think I said it about Spider-Man Homecoming. That reminded me a lot of the Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man animated series. And this reminds me a lot of the Avengers Assembled animated series with Hulk and Thor kind of being rivals and going back and forth. That comedy element reminded me a lot of that relationship they have in the animated series.
And we've said it before, that the animated series, I mean, they fucking rock. Yeah. I mean, you know, so to have that same, you know, kind of feel and emotion to it, I mean, I think is going to make for a phenomenal, you know, big screen.
And, you know, the Ultimate series in the comics and the, both and all those recent animated series for Marvel have been huge successes for them as is. So it only makes sense that they're going to draw from those type of characters to help propel into the live action MCU stuff that they've been doing lately.
And in this one, you know, we actually get Hulk not just raging in the battle sequence. We get like him and Thor just chilling out, talking and stuff, which is hilarious. And he's like, "We're just a couple of hotheads." He's like, "Yes, you know, Hulk like fire, you're like water." He's like, "Well, I'm kind of like fire too." "Yeah, but Hulk raging inferno, Thor more smoldering fire."
Exactly. Hulk isn't just this monster that's constantly destroying everything. The Hulk is turning into an actual character.
And when you see Bruce Banner and Thor talking, he's trying to catch him up what all's happened. He's like, "And we had a huge fight." And he's like, "Did I win? Oh, no, I beat you easily." He's like, "I don't know, that doesn't sound right."
Exactly.
Bruce Banner's giving Thor shit.
it's even better that they're two completely separate individuals between Banner and Hulk.
Yes.
So one thing happens, then Thor needs to catch him up on, this when you're Hulk, all this is what happened.
And then you get the sweet Thor and Loki blasting people with laser cannons sequence.
Oh, you mean the... What is it? The Men in Black scene.
Yes. They walk in with the giant lasers. "Hello, guys."
So.
Yeah, I saw them like, "I've seen this before."
This feels familiar.
Nothing new under the sun.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, there's the lighthearted, comic book, adaptation. Next, we're going to talk something a little bit darker and a character that I've always loved. So we're going to talk about Spawn, because apparently Todd McFarlane now has, found a home for his forthcoming Spawn movie.
Again.
Yes.
And so, he is actually going to direct.
Yes.
Which is a definite plus.
That's one thing, is why it's taken so long. I've seen interviews with McFarlane. He's like, "People have offered to make another Spawn movie, but it's something that I think I can do a better job of directing it, and I did not want to just give it away to someone else to make a movie like we had the last one." So now that this is not, the director is in, or, the creator's in charge of the entire boat, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so, I think right now, Todd McFarlane has said that it's going to be much more horror-focused with, estimated $10 million budget. I mean, that's a sizable amount of change to work with.
It's kind of small compared to other comic book films, but true. If he's going for a darker horror, you can do that on a, sometimes a smaller budget is better when you're dealing with, horror genre. Well,
I mean, and speaking of that is,
most of the $10 million is going to go to the animation of his
game. Blumhouse is the studio that he's...
And Chains.
Partnered with. And, they've done, films like Paranormal Activity, The Belko Experiment, The Purge. So, I mean...
If anybody's going to do horror, they're the ones that they have a proven track record. So, I'm interested to see this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm curious, as we get more updates, obviously we'll keep you folks apprised as we know more. So, stay tuned for that. And then, You know, we were talking earlier off air about Wonder Woman and how great of a film it is. Well, the Wonder Woman sequel has got a release date, and it looks like they're shooting for December 13th, 2019. So,
aren't we jumping gun? I mean, you missed her next sequel that's coming up before that. The movie that she's going to let Batman and Superman be in, along with a couple other big
Wonder
characters.
Justice League.
Along with a couple of other big characters.
I mean, this will be a standalone sequel, oh,
okay.
I guess. I guess yeah. Not the Injustice League sequel this year.
Avengers 3? with DC Universe?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if they're going to bring it to modern times or we're going to get another period piece like the last Wonder Woman movie.
Well, I mean, if they follow the same track like Captain America did, I think they've done the previous, you know, the backstory bit already. So they'll fast forward it to whatever happens from the outset of what happens in Justice League will carry forward into...
Probably. And like I said, I actually surprisingly like Wonder Woman, you know, because like I said, the first two of this new DCU, I've just kind of been like, eh. But this was, like I said, I'm actually like interested in seeing more of this. It kind of makes me hopeful for Justice League, because like I said, it wasn't a bad movie. And, you know, I like the way they kind of bookended it with it, the whole movie pretty much being a flashback to her kind of remembering her origin story instead of just the whole movie being set in the past like Captain America was. Because I was like, when they were like, oh, it's World War One, I'm like, yeah, they're pretty much ripping off Captain America. But kind of adding those bookend segments of it being a flashback, you know, yeah. Kind of explained it all.
It keeps in perspective.
Yeah, like I thought it was an interesting way of doing it.
Well, speaking of different ways of doing it and perspectives.
Ass blasters?
We're done with ass blasters.
Thank God.
You know, talk about, you know, one of our beloved TV series, Doctor Who. And we now know who our next Doctor is going to be, and it's going to be Jodie Whittaker.
Woohoo. Super excited.
So, you know, once we get the, you know...
Oh, come on.
the you know, Christmas episode, I think, is, you know, when they'll do the changeover.
That's the usual methodology. Yeah, and I got to catch up. I think it's on Netflix. I don't know, because I've not seen any of this last season of Doctor Who. I kind of fell off and forgot to load it on my DVR.
Yeah.
But Picaldi's been good. I mean, it's... I don't know. For some people, there's a little bit of a backlash, like, oh, this is just, you know, more, you know, freaking politicalizing stuff. But, I mean, you know, they've established in the series that the Doctor or any of the Time Lords doesn't have to regenerate as a dude every time. You know, it seems kind of convenient. But then again, like I said, it's... Give it a shot. My only problem is the new Doctor is kind of hot, and I just don't know how I feel about being a hot doctor. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's always been so fine to fantasize about the
companions.
Yeah, that's always been this, you know, the dude and the hot companion. But now, like, the doctor's hot, and you're just like, I don't want Peter Capaldi's head popping into my head when I'm fantasizing about hot doctor.
But just think,
when
you fantasize about the hot doctor, she used to be Peter Capaldi.
No, that just kills the boner.
And I mean, Matt Smith.
That's the anti-Viagra.
And David Tennant.
I mean, she was in the a little like kind of low budget horror movie, Attack the Block, and she was actually good. That's the only thing I've seen that she's been in, and I enjoyed
that was a good movie.
That also had what's his name from, you know, the new Star Trek, or not Star Trek, Star Wars. Finn was in that movie.
What's his name?
But yeah, that was a good movie. She's, you know, obviously a good actress. So like, I will give it a shot.
John Boyega
or whatever. So yeah, I'll give it a shot. I need to catch up with the last of Capaldi's episodes before she takes over. But I mean, it's going to be an interesting new dynamic. So how are we going to get like buff dude companions now? Or
I mean, only time.
Or
we'll
have more women companions.
Yeah,
who knows.
The doctor don't care.
Well, I know we're going to have one last.
Maybe we'll get Captain Jack back.
Fingers crossed, I tell you.
So, any other news or tidbits floating that...
One thing that's kind of still in the rumor stage, but they said, you know, there's been back and forth of whether Ben Affleck is going to stay Batman, but apparently they finally worked out their negotiations and he's agreed to portray Batman in three more Batman films. But they say those three films are going to lead into a Batman Beyond film, which is something I've been hoping for forever.
I think you and millions of other people.
And the thing is, like, now that I've watched Spider-Man, Michael Keaton is still badass, and he's old enough now. I say if Affleck doesn't want to do Batman after three films, we need Michael Keaton to play old man Batman for the Batman Beyond film.
All in.
If not Kevin Conroy, because if you ever see, he kind of looks like an old Bruce Wayne at this point. How badass is that to finally see the voice being a live-action old man Batman?
Oh, would that mean we could have, what's the name as the old, as the, an old Joker?
Hamill.
Mark Hamill.
Oh, I mean, it could very well work.
If we're only lucky. I mean, he came back as the trickster in Flash.
Sure. Just
bring him back as a Joker.
Not to...
Or Cockknocker.
To segue off of that, you left off one big movie release that nerds will be interested in that's coming out this year at the end of the year. Last Jedi releases.
Oh, yeah, that's, everyone knows that one, though, at this point.
Do we not talk about Jedi?
I think
no. We've just like the trailers, we speak nothing.
Oh, but then we also had a trailer for season two of Stranger Things that was also released at San Diego. Yeah, the
what's
hit that? Yeah, Netflix series, Stranger Things, speaking of things from the 80s.
What's about that? What's that about?
Me catch up with the rest of the world who has seen this movie. And it looks just as amazing. I can't wait to Halloween to check this out again. And with that, check us out at Cigar Nerd Podcast. There's no S on that. Cigar Nerd Podcast. Don't get it confused. .com. And we're also on the ESO Network, ESOPodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Cigar Nerd Pod. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever. Leave us a review so more people see the thing. Don't forget to get your cool Cigar Nerd shirts, which I need to order a couple more before Dragon Con, at realmensmokecigars.com. And get your Strike Force Energy at strikeforceenergy.com. Promo code CigarNerds. And with that, two pieces of advice I've learned from Burt Gummer. Always have the proper intelligence, and 4 pounds of C4 might be a bit excessive. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.